Okay, my guest today is extra special. I'm joined by Dr. Margaret Mullett, who has just graduated with her PhD in criminology at Cambridge. Specifically, her research is looking at the Sycamore Tree Project, a programme that aims to prevent offenders reoffending after leaving prison. She began about 13 years ago as an undergraduate reading English. So, good morning, Margaret.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so that's a rather unusual journey from English to criminology. And if you'll forgive me, you are of a more senior standing. So why don't you begin by giving us a potted history of how you started this rather fascinating journey?
Well, it began when my eldest son was actually 16 and looking for a sixth form college. And I saw the English curriculum and thought it was absolutely fascinating. Anyway, I did an English A-level a bit later on, and when I handed in my final piece of coursework, the teacher suggested that I went to university. I thought this was ridiculous because I was far too old for something like that. But nevertheless, curiosity got the better of me, and I popped into the office. I was at Cambridge Regional College. I popped into the office for university applications on my way out, and walked out with an application form, and before I knew it, I'd filled it in and sent it off. And the rest, as they say, is history.
And Cambridge University as well, was that purely out of convenience? Because you live just outside of Cambridge, didn't you?
Yes, it was my local poly. I did apply for a mixed course at Anglia Ruskin as well, reading English and philosophy. But when I got the offer from Cambridge, there wasn't really any question, and by then I'd also decided philosophy probably wasn't my forte.
Okay, so you did your English degree, and actually you hadn't been to university as a youngster either, had you? So this was totally new to you, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I crept under all the age cut-off points. I was in my early 50s when I began, and I went to Lucy Cavendish College, which is a college for mature women who are over 21. Well, I qualified on that score, and it was a wonderful experience. It was so good, in fact, that I didn't really want to stop. And I warn anyone who goes to university later in life that once you've woken those brain cells up, they don't want to lie down again.
Actually, that's interesting because I've heard that quite a lot. You know, when you listen to various people, that sort of, I think, because you find what you finally want to learn about, you know, and then you kind of just want to carry on with it, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, English was absolutely fascinating. I've always loved language, but didn't realise quite how much and quite how much study there is in language and literature as well. I fell in love with literature, which I hadn't done when I was at standard school age.
Mm. Well, we'll go on to how you then went into criminology in just a moment, but how did you balance up family life with going to university? You know, this is, I suppose, what you'd say, the real 21st century woman, isn't it, really, to kind of be doing everything?
Well, that was relatively straightforward because my two older children had already left to go to university themselves. My younger child was still at home, but an adult. So generally speaking, I thought able to cope. So I went off, and also because I wasn't a million miles away from home, I knew that I could just pop in the car and get straight home if there were any crises.
Okay. So anyway, so that then takes us on to how did you get into criminology? English to criminology doesn't seem to be a straightforward path, if you like.
Well, that's a question I'm frequently asked, I have to say. Well, first of all, criminology is not forensic science. It is a social science, really, but it embraces all aspects of crime, not just criminals and not just victims. It embraces the judiciary, it embraces sentencing, it embraces policing. And I also have, I'm a Christian, and I had a bit of a lead into it from my sister, who had talked about this course for rehabilitating prisoners. And that's a course that teaches restorative justice to prisoners. And it's delivered by Christians through a Christian organisation. And I actually, when I first heard about this thing called restorative justice, wasn't very impressed because I'd spent some time as a police officer, as a younger woman. And I didn't think this was a particularly good idea. So I was rather intrigued. And then looking further into restorative justice, also thinking about for continuing my studies at a higher level, I wasn't really turned on by the English opportunities that there were at master's level. So I just happened to look at the master's for criminology, and I went to see someone at the Institute of Criminology in Cambridge at the university, and it sounded as though this was a really good field to go into. It appealed to my love of people, and this programme, I just thought, offered so many opportunities for people to change their lives. And by then, I'd also seen some testimonies from prisoners who had experienced this programme, and so I wanted to look into it further.
And you are, I would say, it's not something that is really big in the UK, so in a way you're a bit of a leading light in this field now, aren't you? And your supervisor Larry Sherman, he has quite a lot to do with this work as well, doesn't he?
Well, when I started, I was doing a master's, and as I said, I was interested in restorative justice. That was going to be the topic of my main dissertation, and I kept coming across these articles and papers written by Professor Sherman, and he became, I don't want to say an idol, but a bit of a hero, because he and his now wife, Dr. Helen Strang, also were very keen on restorative justice. And funnily enough, I don't believe it's a coincidence, but he came to the Institute just as I was ready to begin my PhD.
So that was a nice, timely opportunity, I guess, for you then.
It was, because I was searching for a supervisor. I'd got the funding organised, or not the funding per se, but I'd got the place organised. I'd got the backing from the organisation that did deliver the Sycamore Tree programme, but I hadn't found a supervisor. And you really do need to have a supervisor who's going to watch over your work and mentor you as you do your work when you're doing a PhD. Mm. And if you don't get a supervisor, you won't get a place. Mm. Anyway, he came, he liked my proposal, and I got on with it.
Brilliant. So in a nutshell, what does the Sycamore Tree Project, you know, do? What, how does it run, and how is your involvement in that and your research of it? How do you intend to use that for future?
Right, well, the Sycamore Tree Programme is a programme that teaches prisoners about restorative justice. It actually, its delivery is a bit of a model of what restorative justice can be, but it isn't pure restorative justice itself. But what it does, it talks about how you can, it teaches prisoners about the harms of crime. Restorative justice is all about the harms of crime. The people most involved in crime, the offenders and the victims, are the least involved in the judicial system. And restorative justice puts those two people or those two individuals at the centre of itself, of its processes. And so the Sycamore Tree Programme models that in some ways. It's delivered to up to 20 prisoners at a time, and a real victim of crime comes in and talks to them halfway through about the impact the particular crime they've suffered has had on them.
And I had the privilege of going and seeing some of this, and it's very interesting, isn't it, that I think most people would say, look at a situation, a crime has happened or whatever, and sort of immediately see the family as the victim. But I went to see an end project of this, so the last session of a sum of sessions, if you like, and it's not just about the immediate people affected by it, is it? It's about the ripple effect. That was something that they really emphasised, is the ripple effect that their crime has on society as a whole. And essentially, I guess that's what you're looking at, is the effect that it has on the whole society, and how do we bring people back into society, restore them back to society in the best way possible and actually restore relationships between people and stuff like that. Is that sort of how you see it working?
Well, that would be in essence what restorative justice itself seeks to do. I think what the Sycamore Tree Programme aims to do is to make prisoners aware of crime and the harms it does. And as you say, the ripple effect, it isn't just the immediate victims, it's the wider family. Mm. It's neighbours. You know, if a burglary happens, neighbours in the road often get fearful because they wonder if someone's going to come back. And it's also for the offender's family as well, because children are deprived of parents if they have to go into prison. And, you know, parents, let's say law-abiding parents of offending children, suffer. So, and prisoners, by their nature, have offended quite badly, either fairly small crimes, and I hate to categorise crimes, but lots of them, they're called prolific offenders, or even somebody who's had very few offences in their life, but they're very serious when they have. So prisoners, by their nature, are pretty serious, seriously into crime. Mm. And often, one of the ways that they cope with the harm they probably suspect that they've done is to deny it. Mm. So, for example, a burglar will consider that somebody's insured. They don't consider the fact that a home is supposed to be a safe place, and that once they've invaded it, even if the victim has never seen them, can practically never, or certainly for a long time after a burglary, sit quietly and hear noises in the rest of the house without being very frightened. Mm. And burglars really don't realise that.
Yeah. So it's highlighting it to them and kind of reflecting it back and making them see. So what is your ultimate vision? I mean, okay, you've now got this PhD. What's your ultimate vision? What would you like to be doing in the future?
Well, I'm no expert on prisons, but I have seen, you know, things deteriorate over the few years I've been involved with prisons. I used to work through the chaplaincies because those are that's the department within the prisons that deliver the programme. And I've seen morale going up and down, and I obviously hear things. And prisons, contrary to what the popular press or the popular vision is, are not places of holiday camps. To be deprived of your liberty is very serious indeed. And then if you add to that that you're locked in your cell for upwards of 20 hours a day, you're probably sharing with someone you don't necessarily like. And although prisons and prison officers and most people really want to deliver rehabilitation to these people, with all the budget cuts, I know that rehabilitation and education is suffering. So what my vision is I think sometimes we set prisoners up to fail because we put a lot of effort in whilst they're in custody, but when they're released, there is no help or very, very little help, and certainly very little joined up. And my vision for the future is to see some kind of residential aftercare. I have actually seen a model that I very much liked in Latvia, because I was involved in a EU project where we were looking at restorative programmes in prisons. And what is lacking is, okay, some prisoners, not all, get some kind of accommodation when they leave prison. But if they are programs, they're not part of the accommodation, so they're just left dangling often. Mm-hmm. And it's very little surprise to most people involved in that kind of thing that prisoners end up back in prison
because it's their comfort zone, isn't it, I suppose. And so, sort of bringing this to a close then, how did it feel to finally graduate, you know, after 13 years of study and, you know, ongoing research? How did it feel to graduate?
Well, I have to say, in some ways it's strange because I'm now an alumna of Lucy Cavendish College, and I haven't been an alumna for 13 years, as you say, and that's quite strange. On the other hand, the graduation itself was very special. I had my family and a couple of very close friends, and actually the college made it very nice as well. They really... they really make it feel as though you've made an achievement, because I think often most people who have done PhDs are not quite fed up with it at the end, but are really worn down because it's quite gruelling sometimes. And it's a very lonely or lonesome study, because you are the only one who is actually working in that field. You have a supervisor, obviously, and you have friends around you, but it's different from doing a course where all of you are involved in the same amount, you know, the same pieces of work. So it was really, the day itself was very special, because as I say, the college made it feel special, having my family, and my family were clearly thrilled that I'd managed to finish, and yes, that made it extremely special for me. So yes.
And your Christmas plans?
Relax.
Okay, so thank you very much. And finally, I did say at the top of this that you were extra special. I happen to have so I'm gonna get emotional. I happen to have watched this journey from the very beginning, and you've known my whole life story, because you are in fact my mother. So I'm very proud of you. I'm beaming from ear to ear. And it's a bit like bring your parents to work. Anyway, we're slightly late getting to it. It's 11:45 and it's time for the travel.